This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
All right, so Anthony Weaver, the defensive coordinator, who Seth and I are both big fans of, former teammate of Seth's. I did a lot of radio with Weave back in the day. I think he's a really smart dude. I think he's a good coach. I feel bad the hand that he's been dealt this year, but I know Anthony Weaver is going to try to make the best of it. It would appear yesterday that he may have reached a bit of a breaking point. He did overhear, it looks like. He saw Romeo's press conference from earlier in the week where I forget which media member asked the question, but it was about accountability on the defense, accountability among players, not fake news.
That's what I say. Somebody in the media does something I don't like, I say fake news.
So he went on a rant trilogy yesterday. We're going to do what I like to do with Star Wars sometimes, is binge watch the trilogy here.
Okay. Are we going to start like chronologically, though? Are we going to start with the first part? And we're not going to do this stupid starting at number four?
No, we're not going to start with an Anthony Weaver press conference from 5 years ago and then jump ahead in time. No, we're not going to do that. But here is Anthony Weaver. This was the one that got a lot of run on TV because he cursed. Here is Anthony Weaver on narratives surrounding accountability.
We got to not give up 60-yard runs at the end of the game, Aaron. This narrative that's being painted like my guys are undisciplined and running around blocks, quite frankly, and to be put it bluntly, is bullshit. My guys play hard, they battle, they're doing the absolute best they can, and they leave their everything they have on that football field to go out there and stone the run. We lost the game 10-0. Yeah, you could say it's been 17-0. All right, but we expect to go out there and stop the run every time we do it. But to sit here and paint this narrative, there was a question asked to Romeo the other day about the accountability of the defense. Are they accountable? Hell yeah, they're accountable. Anybody that's worked for me, anything I've done in my entire life has been accountable. And if that's ever questioned, then I'll resign. Okay? But these guys battle. They fight. They're doing everything they can to go out there and stop the run. And we're going to try to do it again this week.
You can hear the fist hitting the table and everything. Seth, what is your Rotten Tomatoes
score? They got to get a more solid table in there for all the fist bumping, fist pounding that goes on there.
There's a little vibration that goes on. What is your Rotten Tomatoes score for the first leg of the Anthony Weaver trilogy? What did you think of that?
I would give that. This is tricky because I mean, Romeo Crennel himself has talked about gap discipline, which is different than overall discipline. It's you're splitting hairs a little bit. So in terms of actual accuracy about the league's worst run defense, I mean, if you're the league's worst run defense, it's fair to say that there are multiple issues. Starting with talent, then going on to other things, you know, it's like there's a lot of things you're not going to be doing well if you're the league's worst run defense. But in terms of what Weaver, I think, is trying to accomplish here, which is let his guys know that he's sticking up for him and he's got their back, then I'm going to have to give that an 8 out of 10.
Okay.
8 out of 10 for raw emotion and for him achieving what he wants to do, which I think he's just basically trying to, in this really rough season, try to stick up for his guys and give them something to rally behind.
Three questions later, the trilogy continued.
Again, our guys battle. They try very hard to do their jobs and execute their assignments. Are they perfect? Absolutely not. Am I perfect? Absolutely not. But it's not like we're out there swimming blocks trying to make plays. That's not what happened. Nobody cared when Jadeveon Clowney was here and swimming blocks and hitting TFLs, all right? But that's not what happened. Our guys are very, very prideful in what they're trying to do. Have we had the results we wanted? Absolutely not. Have we given up a lot of yards in the fourth quarter? Yes, all right, but it's not because of a lack of discipline. Our guys are hungry. They want to. They continue to compete every single day on that practice field for me, all right? And I'm certainly trying. I'm not trying. I hold them accountable, and they want to do right, okay? And we're doing everything we can to go out there and stop the run.
Wow. A surprise appearance in this leg of the trilogy from Jadeveon Clowney. It's like Boba Fett showing
up. Yeah, I know.
Up
that
for
was
like 2 minutes.
It was a cameo out of nowhere.
Right, wow.
That was like invoking the name. And you're trying to figure out, like, wait a second, is that Shade? I don't think it was Shade at all. It was that Clowney was capable of, you know, going outside the defense a little bit at times, but he could get away with it because he would bust stuff up. Use a hand grenade. You know, a hand grenade doesn't have to be accurate. A hand grenade just has to be kind of close to where you're supposed to be,
right,
and it's going to take care of a lot of business. That's what Jadeveon Clowney would do. So, so
what's your Rotten Tomatoes score on this leg of the trilogy?
The plot twist of bringing in Jadeveon Clowney was a good one.
Yeah,
again, really, really sticking up for his guys who, look, frankly, just they're not. It's not a good defense.
Right.
I'll give this one a 7.
7. 7 out of 10. Yeah. Someone just said...
Because the Clowney one was a little too far. There was no build-up to it or segue into it necessarily.
Yeah, it felt like they were just kind of just trying to fish for a holy bleep moment in the movie. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of build-up to that storyline. You're right. I love this. I love that the listeners are now joining you and I at dissecting these press conferences and seeing who's throwing shade at who. Text message, and we're going to get to the third leg of the trilogy in a second. Text message. Weaver said they lost 10-0. It was 10-7. Since we're speculating on these press conferences, was he taking a shot at the offense?
I know. I was wondering about that part. He was so angry. Look, I don't grade down at all for inaccuracy in numbers when you're on a roll.
Yeah.
Sometimes the details get lost in the wash, and hey, that's just life, baby. So if anything, I respect his ability to move on, because somewhere in the back of his mind, he probably did think, oh, wait a second, it wasn't. But he kept going. He didn't stop himself. He was on a roll. It was like sometimes you say, hey, did we quit when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?
Right.
You just got to keep rolling after that part. You don't slow down to fact check yourself.
The two things on that. One, I think Bill O'Brien might have seen that as a fireable offense. Like Anthony Weaver might have gotten fired over that, because Bill O'Brien, nobody liked to remind us more about how the Texans moved the ball against prevent defenses than Bill O'Brien. Are you saying that He didn't count the 7 points that we scored with 5 minutes to go in the game and the Browns playing prevent defense? Number two, you know who definitely knew what the score of the game was? Gamblers. That's who knew what the score of the game. I knew it was 10-7 because I had the Texans plus 3.5. Baby.
I wonder too. Yeah, the offense in there, it's tough if you're a defensive coach. Look, weather was a concern, obviously, but it's tough if you go those four quarters and only allow 10 points and then lose it on a big run at the end. Yeah, there probably is a tendency. Anytime you hold a team to 17 points, in this case 10 points, but really 17 points, you always feel like, okay, come on, the offense, can I get a little help somewhere? The problem is with this, it doesn't really tell the whole story with that game. The points don't really tell the story about the fourth quarter collapse. Same as you pointed out earlier with the Ravens game. The points didn't really tell the story about how completely and totally the defense collapsed in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was a decimation in the fourth quarter. All right, here's the third leg of the Anthony Weaver sticking up for the defense trilogy. Speaking of fourth quarters, he was asked, what's been different in the fourth quarter?
I mean, John, we were doing the exact same thing we were doing in the fourth. You know, they score the touchdown there in the fourth quarter, the beginning of the fourth quarter. J.J. Watt setting the edge. The tight end pulls him down. So then the running back captured the edge. Well, how do I coach that? What do you want me to fix? You want me to send it to the NFL? You get an I'm sorry letter. All right. That's not going to do anything for me. That's not being undisciplined. That's them make a play. They made a play on 3rd and 18. You probably shouldn't even be in that situation. All right. Hats off to them. They made a play. We get a PI call. These guys chuck these balls up in the air. Their receivers run into my DBs, and all of a sudden we get PI calls. Well, there's not a whole lot we can do about that except complain to the league, and then I get an I'm sorry letter. Okay. But it's nothing that we're doing differently. All right. Unfortunately, we've been put in these situations where we got to get stops in the fourth in order to get the ball back to our offense, and we haven't been successful enough. All right. But our guys, again, that's not a want to. That's not a work thing. They work. They try. And we just got to be better in those critical situations. It's competitive excellence. Right. John Wooden talked about it. Urban Meyer talked about it. You got to be at your best when your best is needed. And right now, unfortunately, we haven't been able to do that consistently enough on defense.
I'm glad he pointed out. He didn't mention him by name, but this number 82 on Cleveland, this Rashard Higgins, He's a bitch, man. Like, he's a flopping biatch. He is.
Was that Higgins that JJ drove into the ground there on that one, and he pulled him down?
No. I'm talking about the pass interference where he talked about,
oh, the receiver.
My guy runs into our DB. He did that like three or four times in that game where the ball just gets chunked up for grabs, and he goes, starts flailing his arms like he's James Harden or something.
The play that he was talking about, the tight end that JJ drove down into the ground and the tight end pulled him on top of him. Yes, that could have been called a hold. The problem is they're calling hardly any holds this year, so that's not fair. But also in that moment, I looked at it also as, okay, JJ beat the snot out of that tight end and he got held. That's sometimes when you're playing with the power that JJ has versus a tight end, you got to kind of almost pull back a little bit and just hold the edge. Then when you try to destroy somebody like that and then they pull you down on top of them, technically it's not JJ's fault, but like my old rule I always go back to is don't get held.
Right.
You know, just in the run game at least, it's hard to get off blocks in the run game. Offensive linemen, as they're getting beat, have really crafty ways of getting you. But that wasn't a gap discipline issue per se. And then I would say on the play after that, immediately after that, PJ Hall, he got taken out with an illegal block. He was engaged with the guard and the tackle took his knees out. And I don't know if I expected to see a fine out of that one. I don't think we have seen that. And it's nobody wants to hear it. You're still the league's worst run defense. But I think there are valid spots where Weaver could have a bone to pick with some of the officiating. But at other times, no. It just was simply they just didn't play good defense.
Did you want to carry this in the next segment? I see you jotted down, I have a bone to pick with Sean. No,
I don't want to use it as a tease because it's not that big a deal.
Oh, okay.
But I do notice because it's nothing tease worthy. But I've having this hernia surgery next Tuesday. This hernia seemingly is getting worse and worse as I go along. Like it's the bulge is getting bigger. I don't even like to take a shower anymore because I've got there's parts of my body that aren't in the right spot right now.
Yeah.
And it's freaking me the hell out. And I feel like in this last week, I feel like you've been funnier than you have been in a long time. And every time you make me laugh, I have to do this like crouch now when I laugh to keep it from hurting in my ball region.
Yeah.
Where like I have to like crouch over and put pressure on that whole area down there to keep my intestines in their proper spot. And it's really hard. Like a lot of times, like yesterday when you started quoting Boogie Nights as I was going into a live read.
Right.
I had to crouch like this the whole time I was doing the live read because I was convulsing with laughter.
See, now you've just told me I've got at least for another one show, because you're getting your surgery on Tuesday, I've got at least a little bit of power over you. So I'm going to go read a lot of joke books this weekend. I'm going to be Jackie the Joke Man.
Nothing funnier than jokes in a joke book.
Right.
ow. That's
all right. Let's go to break. I don't want to hurt you. You're my friend. All right. Cal McNair outlines the plan for the head coaching search to John McClain. We've got Lisa Ann joining us at the bottom of the hour for some fantasy football advice. Cal McNair outlining the head coaching search plan to McClain is next. All right, it is a football Friday, and there's a game on Sunday. We will certainly touch on that between now and the end of the show. The Patriots come into town, taking on the Texans. Noon kick, 9 o'clock Texans countdown with me and Seth. Post-game following the game with me and Clint Sterner. So we look forward to you lending us your ears on Sunday. We always appreciate you tuning in on a football Friday as well. That's number one. Number two. A lot of you fantasy players out there, stay tuned. Bottom of the hour, Lisa Ann will jump in with us for a few minutes to share some thoughts on fantasy football in Week 11 coming up this weekend. Started last night, actually, with the Cardinals losing to the Seahawks, 28-21, so the Seahawks retake control of the NFC West. The other thing I think, and this is probably big picture, Seth, the most important thing that's going on with the Texans with football in town here is the head coaching search. And John McClain, on the heels of Jamie Roots clarifying Jack Easterby's role, or I guess clarifying that Jack Easterby will not be the general manager of this team permanently. He's the interim GM right now. A day after Jamie Roots did that on a conference call with some season ticket holders, Cal McNair did an interview with John McClain where he reinforced that. He gave more, hopefully more clarity To what Jamie, or following up on the clarity that Jamie gave, I guess, he said, first of all, he said about the search, we're going to interview offensive and defensive coaches. We're going to cast a broad net. We'll leave no stone unturned. And then regarding Easterby, he said the new general manager will determine Easterby's role, if any, within the organization. Quote, there's no decision made on Jack until we can talk to the next general manager. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. So that's where we stand right now on everything.
Yep. And I guess, you know, McLean is the one who wrote that they don't know what Easterby's role will be, if any. I felt like Cal's direct quote was a little bit more ambiguous, you know, because Cal McNair says that Easterby's going to be a part of this organization moving forward, but then he also says that that the new GM will determine Jack Easterby's role. Well, could that include no role at all, or will it include, you know, like who's going to have the power there? Because that's the biggest question. I think any general manager wants to go in and know who exactly am I working for. And there are other situations in the league where the general manager is working for somebody between the owner and the general manager, but it's not a guy quite like Jack Easterby. You know, it's not a guy that has so little experience in the front office, and there's a certain amount of mystery about what it is exactly he does. So I do think that general managers that come in here are going to have that conversation with Cal McNair. I think Cal McNair and Jamie Rutz and anybody else involved in the search, if they don't understand it now, they are starting to understand that Jack Easterby having any power over any of these guys is going to be a concern of theirs. Yeah. I think there's just people in the personnel community and the guys that you might be interviewing for this role or elsewhere in front office capacities just don't know enough about Jack Easterby to feel comfortable working for him. And whatever the actual scenario was, there is a perception around the league that Jack Easterby was damn full bore, 100% on board with everything Bill O'Brien was doing. And those were some of the weirdest, wackiest, dumbest moves the front office has ever made in the NFL. So if you ask, hey, I mean, you're going to go on and you're going to work with the guy that stood by Bill O'Brien as he traded away DeAndre Hopkins and made all these other moves and left you with no draft picks right now, that guy's going to be your boss. That's going to be an issue. It flat out is. So if they don't right now realize that, they will. And I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think every general manager that comes in here will probably try to say nice things about Jack Easterby and feel like, hell yeah, I'll bring him on. And I think like people say very nice things about him and how he works with other people. So we'll find a role for him. But if after 6 months it doesn't work out, then Jack Easterby can go the same way Bill O'Brien brought Jack Easterby in and found himself out on his butt. Jack Easterby could find himself out on his butt too.
John and Landry yesterday, when these quotes came out, because the quotes came out from Cal in this article in the middle of their show, I thought it was interesting. You know, Landry was more hardcore connecting these dots than Lopez, but he had Lopez pretty sold on it by the end of the show that if you piece the puzzle together of these quotes from Cal, both in John's article and to Schefter, Landry feels like they've made their mind up already as to who they're going to hire. Like they've already identified, to the extent that he was going and looking at Jack Easterby's agent's page to see which other potential GMs, coordinators, potential head coaches had agent ties to Jack Easterby. Is that a reach? Is that an overextension? Could it be a tell? Maybe they've narrowed things down a little bit.
Well, I mean, what do they have evidence, or what are they saying?
Oh,
they're
no,
just, they're just speculating.
Speculating, okay. Right. Of course. Are you getting evidence? What are you talking about?
You know where I would caution is that line of thinking, just because the Texans have already been accused of tampering in a GM search once before, and I think that's something that's important to Cal McNair. I think that he felt like his father ran his business in a certain way. And Cal wants to honor that. And I think Cal's going to be super, super. And that's one reason you have a Corn Fairy. It's such a stupid name. That's why you have a
K-O-R-N-F-E-R-R-Y.
So the search firm that they're using is Corn Fairy, spelled with a K.
Do your kids believe in the Corn Fairy?
This is why you have a Corn Fairy, Sean. to bring you magical, wondrous candidates from all over the land. But when you have a corn fairy, when you have a corn fairy,
I'm not the one making you laugh right now. I just want to be clear.
I think like a corn fairy is like this overweight Midwestern farmer smoking a corn cob pipe with a corn cob up his butt so, yeah, and a wife beater for some reason.
Worst. Yeah.
Here's what we got here for you.
All right, continue. What were you going to say?
Okay, so the corn fairy, what the corn fairy does for you is he. The Corn Fairy, the firm, presents that layer of separation where, hey, they're just doing their research and they're figuring all these things out and they're gathering information about candidates and they can interview people, talk to agents without actually interviewing. It's less likely to actually be tampering. It remains that level of separation.
Cal made that point multiple times with McClain. I'm glad you brought that up because I'm guessing that there is probably some degree of embarrassment over how the Casario thing went. Still, especially given that was Cal's first real big decision as the owner of the team to let Brian Gain go and then to pursue Nick Casario, he made it clear a couple of times. I'll read the quote that's in front of me right now. This is Cal McNair to John McClain. Quote, we've started the process. It's a rigorous process. We've started internal discussions. Until we're allowed to talk to people about the positions, we have to be careful about what we say and do because of all the rules that are in place. So he's basically acknowledging there, like, look, and that's why when I was listening to Landry, I mean, Landry was emphatic that they found their guy, you know, that they've identified their guy. And I don't think it's crazy to think that maybe if they really respect Easterby, that there could be either intentionally or maybe subliminally a slant towards some of the guys Easterby has an association with, either through former employers, potential employers. You know, he was almost going to the Colts with McDaniels back in the day or through his agent. But I don't think that they've settled on their guy. I think they want to go through a process with these guys. And a lot of these guys, you've got to interview them. You got to vibe them out. That would not, if they have, then I would be really disturbed if they've settled on their guys, because it means that there's a whole lot of things that they will have missed out on in going through that process.
Listener says the Easterby issue is way overhyped. He's not going to impact personnel or coaching decisions, but his other organizational and people skills can be valuable. Guess you need filler. Well, listen, friend of Easterby, this is and/or family member. It's a big story. Like, if you don't think this is a big story, you're clueless about the way human beings operate. Just because it's got, now you might think that it shouldn't be a big story, and that might be a valid point. But this has got soap opera elements out the wazoo. This has backstabbing elements. This has intrigue. This is mystery. It's a national story. Why? Because it gets clicks like crazy for Florio and these guys. Like, it's an intriguing. It's all the things that honestly are way more exciting and interesting to talk about than previewing the 500 Patriots or something like that. It's so I accuse you, sir, who's texting in, of being a close relation of Jack Easterby. Well, if you've got that piddly response,
and at the very least, a terrible future program director of a radio station. Yeah. You know, the juiciest storyline, I would ignore that because I believe it's way overhyped. Okay. let's talk to Lisa Ann in the next segment. Let's spend a few minutes with her, get some advice. Fantasy football coming up. Week 11, so it's getting down to it probably in a lot of your leagues. Stardom, sit-ems, injuries, a really intriguing quarterback situation in New Orleans with some news that just came out a little earlier this morning. So we'll get into all of that in the next segment. Lisa Ann joining us here on Payne and Pendergast. That's next. All right, we are efforting Lisa Ann.
And I made up with the guy that I accused of being friends with, Jack Easterby.
Oh, you did?
He's actually, that's nice. Yeah, he's actually we had a discussion about management during the break.
Yeah, he said he's not a 35-year manager, huh?
Yeah. Well, one thing we're commiserating about is the sports hiring in general. You hire these guys to be general managers or personnel directors or what have you, and they very rarely have much actual management experience.
Right.
If you start off, we've got listeners right now who maybe started working at a fast food place when they were 16 and now they're an assistant manager and have probably had to spend way more time actually managing employees than a lot of NFL executives, because that's just the way it is. System screwed.
It is.
You know what they should do, Sean? Honestly, they should make guys in these football organizations go and work at a fast food place. Because, man, there's nothing like managing a restaurant where the employee turnover is 50%.
There's something
people
have
no
to that.
Shows, and you got to figure it out. And, yeah, you got to work with a whole bunch of different personalities. Like, and then get that certain callousness about you and actually make decisions on the fly before you do it for a multi-billion dollar company.
Do you remember when Mark Cuban said, I wouldn't hire that guy to manage a Dairy Queen, and the Dairy Queen people got really mad, so Mark Cuban went and managed a Dairy Queen for a day, and he's like, wow, this is like kind of hard managing a Dairy Queen. You know. All right, start texting in 713-572-4610. Your questions, start them, sit them. We will talk about that right now with our guest at this time each and every week. She joins us on the hotline this week, Lisa Ann, our fantasy football expert. Good morning, Lisa. How are you?
I'm great. You know, I guess we just didn't have a good connection today. I'm sorry about that. We're going to make do on the phone.
Yeah, no, you sound great. So, yeah, we'll be fine. I guess we'll start off by touching on some news that I just saw come down a little earlier this morning. And it has to do with the New Orleans Saints quarterback situation. Drew Brees is dealing with some rib and lung issues right now from a hit that he took. The report is that Taysom Hill received starters reps in Saints practice this week, and quote, signs are pointing towards the QB getting his first start. That's per Ian Rapoport. So that's interesting, Lisa. Taysom Hill starting instead of Jameis Winston, it would look like, in New Orleans this week. So two-part question. One, do you think Taysom Hill gets all the snaps, or do you think we see Jameis? And two, what does this do to leagues where Taysom Hill is listed as, a tight end? Is this almost like you're getting a low-key second quarterback in there?
It sure is. And a lot of fantasy hosts this week on my channel were just nonstop talking about how you have to pick up Taysom Hill off the waiver wire in case this happens. They really like Taysom Hill in New Orleans. And, you know, Peyton really had discussed last season that he wants to go out there and see what kind of value they have. Jameis Winston kind of being more like a Band-Aid. This is an opportunity for them to say, is Taysom Hill our future? And this is a great chance for him to get. But remember something. We're not getting truth from camps. The one wonderful thing that came out of COVID protocols for all these coaches is to really be able to fake out the other team and what they're planning for, right? So now you're not planning for Jameis Winston, and you have barely any tape on Taysom Hill. So it gives your matchup a little bit more panic time, and Atlanta can say, oh, we don't really know what we're going to do here, which most likely to lose in the last 4 minutes anyway. But I think we're going to see some Jameis as well. But look, Taysom Hill can be such a gadget player that it doesn't mean we won't even see him and Jameis on the field at the same time.
So with the Texans game this weekend, if a Texans fan is listening right now, but he's a true mercenary and he doesn't care about screwing over his own team, I got to think that he's pretty intrigued by Damian Harris, the running back for the Patriots.
He is. And, you know, Bill Belichick put the questionable tag on him yesterday for whatever reason, which is unknown. But I always tell everyone with the Patriots, do not panic on your fantasy team over the questionable tag. It'll come off by Sunday morning. You just got to grin and bear it. It is a tasty matchup, right? You're going to play him. I was lucky to get him late in some leagues, not thinking I would be using him till bye weeks. And I've actually been rolling him out and been pretty successful. I don't have the trust in Cam Newton that everybody else does. For me, this is in sports betting. It's a stay away game because we haven't seen two consistent games from Cam Newton yet. And that's really what we need to see. No, Julian Edelman is a problem. So, you know, this is a free-for-all, and I think that Deshaun Watson has a good opportunity here to get some good points for fantasy owners and make up for the heartbreak that I was faced with last week. I benched Tom Brady, who gave me like 30-some points, to be loyal to my Houston roots and my love for the Texans and Sports Radio 610, played Deshaun Watson.
Oh, God, I feel like I feel like it's our fault, Lisa. That you did you lose that? I'm assuming that you might have lost that matchup, leaving all those points on the field.
Okay, crazy I didn't, because another bad pick I had to make because of bye week and injury. I had to play Nyheim Hines, and I was like, you know what, this is just awful. No, I won by 8 points, which was the difference of Nyheim Hines getting me 28 points. So I still won the matchup.
Did Nick Chubb rip your heart out for any of your teams by running out at the 1 yard line?
Oh, man. I mean, it's not all about us, right? That's what you're watching. You're like, oh, yeah, that's right. They play this game for their own purpose. It's not all about fantasy owners, right? So I have to forgive him. You know, it makes up for it? When Todd Gurley was supposed to do the same thing 4 weeks ago and landed in the end zone, and fantasy owners were like, yes, thank you. So it all balances out.
Text in 713-572-4610 if you've got a question for Lisa about who to start. It's week 11, so we're getting down to it here in fantasy leagues everywhere. Lisa, One hard thing to do this time of year, especially with injuries, and especially because it seems like fewer and fewer teams go with bell cow running backs, is to find solutions at the running back position with bye weeks and everything else. A couple sleepers that I've seen floating around, Kalen Ballage with the Chargers, Salvon Ahmed with the Miami Dolphins. Who are these guys?
Yeah, they're your band-aid, right? They're your temporary fix. So what you're hoping is potentially by trade deadline, these guys will have a good game for you and someone will be as desperate next week as you were this week. These are players that we've seen surfacing. Ballage especially, who has been almost a journeyman in the NFL already, but now has the opportunity to step up. You have to take a chance. You know, it's just like me taking a chance on Nyheim Hines. He had a great week one. I paid money for him in blind bidding. Week two, he stunk, but for some reason, I didn't throw him off my bench. I didn't have to, and being able to put him in there last week really helped me. So this is a time to make moves, and there are no bell cows right now. We're looking at news with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's dealing with a bit of flu-like symptoms. He did pass his COVID test, but what could this do for us left bell owners who've been sitting patiently and waiting? So there's always news to be following, and I tell everyone, try not to panic until Sunday morning, because you don't want to get rid of a player or make a transition that you can't get back and then find out he's fine and he's playing.
I saw Rob Gronkowski listed by a couple of people as a must-start tight end this week. And emotionally I'm stuck in a spot where I don't feel like I can trust Rob Gronkowski because I've been hurt before. Is he a must-start?
Rob Gronkowski has been a must-start for me for the past 4 weeks, but this week he is not a must-start. I'm actually going to work not to start him because of the situation in Los Angeles. Look what the Rams defense did to Seattle last week. And when you look at the pressure that they're able to apply on Tom Brady, how is he going to be able to set up Gronk? It just seems like it's going to be, at best, a dink and dunk day. Maybe some Scotty Miller action in there. Maybe a little bit of mixing it up. But I don't see success for Brady, and I'm benching him this week in the leagues that I have him.
Did the Hail Mary from Murray to Hopkins win you any games last week, Lisa?
It did, but also it broke my heart for you all. You know what I mean? Because you all saw that. We're like, that could have been us. Like, that could have been Deshaun Watson throwing him that ball.
Lisa, I love how sympathetic you are to us down here. You know that. And you're 100% right. What happened in that Cardinal game hurt worse than anything that's happened with the Texans in a 2-7 season. It was not fun to watch that at all.
No, it stings. Yeah. It still stings, yeah. You know? It definitely does. But, all right, what else you guys got?
All right, Stardom and Sit'ems, Lisa. They're flowing in here on the text page, 713-572-4610. We've got someone who wants to know really badly, Matt Ryan or Cam Newton? Cam Newton against the Texans or Matt Ryan against the Saints this weekend?
You know, I think you're going to look at Matt Ryan consistently putting up yards. We're not looking for wins. I'm still not sold on Cam Newton, so I'm going Matt Ryan.
Someone has a question about trades. I guess their league is still, there's no trade deadline here. They're still able to trade. I have Kyler as my QB1. I have Justin Herbert on my bench. Should I trade Herbert for some more running back depth or keep him as an insurance policy?
That's the scary thing. I've been keeping players as an insurance policy, but if you want to win now, you're going to have to get rid of that insurance policy and you're going to have to trade him for running backs. And I think he has a lot of value. Herbert has a great schedule for the rest of the season. I mean, look, he gets to face the Jets at home this week. I mean, now with his new fresh haircut, the kid's unbeatable, right?
Yeah. No, he does have a new fresh haircut. I was surprised by that. He looks, looks very studious.
He looks 15 years old now. He needs
the
hair to look older.
He does. All right, Lisa, you got to pick two here. A.J. Brown, Titans going against the Ravens. Keenan Allen and the Chargers, who have the Jets. And then Adam Thielen with the Vikings, who have the Cowboys. Thielen, Allen, A.J. Brown.
This is a no-brainer. You're playing anybody against my Dallas Cowboys. They're letting everybody get into the end zone, like Oprah giving away gifts on her show. And then I'm going to go with Keenan Allen because I love the matchup. I mean, again, we just talked about Justin Herbert, the Los Angeles Chargers at home taking on the New York Jets. So you're going to go right there with those two solid bets.
All right, a couple more here. Two of these three, Duke Johnson, Kenny Golladay, or Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
So you got to wait on the Clyde Edwards-Helaire news. I would like to play Clyde Edwards-Helaire in this situation, especially knowing that the Vegas defense has not been able to practice all week.
Yeah.
Duke Johnson has the role, right? And the second one again was
Kenny Golladay.
Kenny Golladay. Okay, right. Kenny Golladay is supposed to be back. Again, I'm going to watch for news on this one. I would say Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Duke Johnson first, Kenny Golladay on the third spot if he is fully healthy.
All right, two more, Brady or Goff?
I don't love what Goff's doing this season, right? But I also don't trust Brady in that defense. So I'm going to go with Goff, as wild as that sounds.
That'll be one that whichever one you choose, you're going to be watching the other one in the same game. So you're either going to feel really, really smart or really, really, not you, Lisa, the yes. texter, whoever they're going to feel True. Really smart or really stupid by the end of the night, because they'll get to watch both guys at the same time. Last one, it's a flex spot, Antonio Brown or Hollywood Brown?
Hollywood Brown has to start seeing an uptick in production. We've seen it the past 2 weeks. I'm not going to play Antonio Brown because I think this is going to be the situation where Jalen Ramsey is like, I'm not going to let Antonio Brown be successful. And we saw that last week, how well he did that with DK Metcalf. So no Antonio Brown this week. Hollywood Brown it is. It's funny, they're relatives, so you're taking one of the cousins.
That's true. Yeah, so the other person can't be mad. Their relative is getting over in the that relative. Situation. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. At The Real Lisa Ann on Twitter, that's where you can get at her there. And she joins us each and every week at this time. She is our fantasy football expert. She is the fantasy football expert, the foremost authority. Lisa Ann, Lisa, have a great weekend. We're going to talk to you next week. I know it's Thanksgiving, but we're still going to talk with you on Friday next week.
This is still important, even though it's a holiday, guys. We still have to give out fantasy advice. So, yes, I'll be on with you Friday morning.
Hell yeah, we do. Lisa, have a great weekend. Enjoy the games.
Thank you. You too.
All right, there it is. Lisa Ann joining us on the show. Hardest working woman in show business. She's going to join us on a Friday next week.
On a Friday after Thanksgiving. And you're going to be under strict no making me laugh instructions for like a week after my hernia surgery.
Oh, your rehab?
I'm getting surgery on Tuesday, so I'll expect no laughter, no mirth, no frivolity for at least 1 week after that.
You'll have two things going for you to that endeavor. One, I will probably still be full of a tryptophan. So let's face it, I'm going to probably bring my C-minus game that day. Number two, I am substitute hosting for Jim Rome that day for the first time in my career.
Which day?
On Friday.
On that Friday?
Yeah,
but you're doing my show too, right?
Well, yes, I'm doing your show. I'm doing the Seth Payne show featuring Sean Pendergast. Yes.
If you're going to do the Jim Rome show, then I assume you're doing the Seth Payne show.
I'm doing the Seth Payne show. I'm doing what I do on the Seth Payne show. Yeah, but I'm excited
about
that.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Should I rename the Deceptively Fast podcast to just the Seth Payne show? Because the Deceptively Fast podcast, it's kind of like a little tongue-in-cheek, hey, I was a white defensive lineman. They always say white guys are deceptively fast. I feel like the appetite for like lighthearted racial humor is maybe past us in this country. And then maybe I should just steer away from anything that might be any kind of like that.
Seth, you know me. I'm a bottom line guy. Do you feel it's holding back your brand and the downloads on the podcast?
I think people have a hard time spelling deceptively.
That could be.
I think that's what it is more than anything.
That could be. That's a little bit of shade at society right there, because it's not that hard of a word to spell, but I think you may be right, generally speaking.
So, yeah. But regardless, don't make me laugh for a week after the hernia surgery.
You got it.
And don't get me angry about anything either, because the people that have gone back to work the next day after the hernia surgery said, just don't laugh and don't get overly excited about something. And I'm like, you listen to this show? What the hell? Like, why are you even giving me this advice?
Right,
yeah.
Right. So you're getting the surgery on Tuesday, and then
I got my COVID. Got my COVID test yesterday. It was so much easier than the first one I got. It's not it's just like, it felt like the one they give you now in the nose, they don't go all the way up into your brain.
Yeah.
It just feels like a more normal nasal culture, which was never all that pleasant an experience. But now having experienced the deep one, the normal nasal culture feels like a walk in the park.
That was the one that they gave us at Texans training camp this year. For the 10 of us who got to go to practice, they gave us the one you got yesterday is the one that they gave us, where they just basically
both
nostrils, and they just sort of rub around the edge of the nostril. They don't jam all the way up into your eyeball.
See, the first nostril they did, and it was just like, she did the right nostril, and it was just right around the rim. They give your nostril a rim job. And then she went to the other one. She said, this one's a little deeper. And bam, there it went. And it was uncomfortable. It wasn't bad, but it was definitely deeper than just around the rim.
Oh, okay, so you got a mixed test. No, mine were both right around the rim of the nostril. Mine were both right around the rim. Yeah. So
I feel like mine's more accurate.
Yours is more like the chocolate and vanilla ice cream. I just got vanilla. You know, it's you got like a Neapolitan. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
All you need to do is spit into a vial, and you would have hit for the trifecta.
I got to squeeze this surgery in before they go on lockdown again, and I got to wait.
That's ballsy. So you're going to be back on Wednesday after hernia surgery?
Yeah, the day after.
Dude.
I asked online how many whether I should, and a couple teachers told me that they went back the next day and just sat down while they were teaching, and that seemed like the closest thing to what I do.
Yeah.
The teaching, you're sitting there, you're talking. Now they're dealing with a lot more stress and unruly people around them than I am. But I felt like if they could do it, then
I can be pretty unruly at times. I don't know. All right, Seth, we are done.
But you probably won't you won't find my weak spots and make fun of me.
No.
The way a teenage kid might.
That's true. Hey, radio.com/picks. You can still sign up for the chance to win $1,000 this week on the Rocket Mortgage Pro Football Pick'em. Compete with me and others. Radio.com/picks. Could be $1,000. Radio.com/picks. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and T-cells to you.
And to you as well. 9 a.m. Seth and I will be back together doing Texans Countdown. We'll be back here 6 a.m. Monday. Until then, have a great weekend, everybody.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.